Nick, happy Sabbath to you all.
Happy Sabbath.
In unison, too. You've been practicing. Well, it's nice to be back again. Last time we were here, the outside looked decidedly different. There was more green in certain places. I think we may have even started hearing the sound of the locusts in the trees. It's a year ago July that we were here last. It's good to be back. Although no one warned us, I mean told us that the men were cooking for the meal tonight. They're not? Okay. Will the men be eating tonight? Okay, we're close. We had the opportunity not too long ago to spend some time at my grandparents' place. They live in the Ozarks. And it was nice to be able to take all the boys back to the farm where they could see where their grandma grew up. And we had the opportunity then to sit in the hot afternoon in the shade of the porch, sitting on the porch swing, and listening to stories. If you learn to ask the right questions, it's amazing what kind of stories you can hear from Grandpa and Grandma. And you can really hear about what life was like. It was nice to be on that porch. On that porch, you can still see where the chin-up bar was, where 30 years previously, my great-grandfather would do some tricks to the consternation of aunts and grandma. At the time, 30 years previous, he had lost most of his eyesight. They had taken away his driver's license because he was starting to drive by feel more than by sight. And he had one of those great big Buicks, and it was a bad combination. So he was being driven now back home. And he got out of the car with a click of his heels, ran across the yard, jumped up onto the porch, went to the chin-up bar, and did a skin the cat move. Now, by this time, he was at least in his 80s, mid-80s. And everybody in the car was shocked except the kids. We just thought this was great. Here's great-grandpa doing something spectacular that we wanted to do and probably tried the next time we were there. Everyone else was concerned for his health. But it was that same porch that we got to be at. My grandparents now lived in great-grandpa's house, and the kids got to sit and listen to some of the stories. And they got to hear about when Grandpa was younger, he would walk as a boy from a farm at the one end of the road in front of that very house on his way to school in the little hamlet of Romance, it was called. It was down in some gullies where a number of streams came together, and that was where he went to school. So he walked past that house twice every day, at least every school day. At the time, there was no gravel on that road. Although the road is essentially the same, there were no trees even on the mountains. You've heard the term bald knobbers. Back in the day, there were no trees on those hills. They were bald. Now there are trees on those hills and gravel on that road. It used to be just bedrock. It's interesting how things change and how the school changed. When he was there, there were 50-some kids who would walk in from various farms around, from up the valleys, over the hills. They had to walk in those days. There were no buses, so they didn't have the problem of canceling school because the bus wouldn't start. We were off most of the week over the long weekend. It got snowy, it got cold, and we can't have kids standing outside because we don't know how to put scarves on them anymore, apparently. Not so in those days. They walked. And there were 50 of them in that school. It was a picturesque little town at one point. They had the school, as I mentioned. They had a church. They had, and it was a one-room schoolhouse, of course. Everyone was together, a consolidated school. There was a general store there and a post office. And around February of each year, that post office got really busy because all kinds of people wanted to mail their letters, their special February 14th-ish letters from the town of Romance. There used to be a grist mill there. There was a tomato cannery right along one of the creeks that led into town. And at one point, there was also even a charcoal mill, which ironically burnt down. Not really. It's fine. It just got abandoned because of disuse. Maybe it got too expensive. But the town changed at one point. People started moving away. The farms that used to support all of those families suddenly would no longer support the families, and people would move away to the city. By the time my mother went to that particular school, there were less than a dozen. still going to that same school. And shortly thereafter, they had to close the school down. I'm sure there's no connection between mom going to that school and closing it down. And then everybody had to be bused into the county seat for education. So now that town has remnants of what it used to be. The school is now a residence, the church a residence, and there are plenty of neighboring towns like it that have a name next to the road, but no town. And we drove through many of those on our last visit there, and it got me thinking about a passage from Jeremiah. If you turn with me, please, to Jeremiah chapter 6. Jeremiah chapter 6. Jeremiah chapter 6, we'll read verse 16. So God's instructed Jeremiah to talk to the southern kingdom to give them a warning. Thus says the Lord. So while he used Jeremiah to deliver the message, he takes claim for that message. He signs it. This is my message, he says. Thus says the Lord. Stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths where the good way is and walk in it. Then you'll find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it. What I want to do today is to speak about this particular passage and how it relates to Western nations today. Review how this passage applies to Western nations today. And what I'd like to do is to dissect this or parse it out in various phrases. And we'll start with stand at the crossroads and look. Stand at the ways and see, as some other translations say. Stand. When traveling, it's important to have supplies. In the wintertime, do you have extra supplies in your vehicle? It's something we got into the habit of doing in Canada growing up. If the car conks out and you're in the cold, you better have some supplies with you. Otherwise, it could be a while before someone comes along and offers assistance. So it's not unusual for those who are accustomed to northern driving in the winter to have a blanket, to have food, which it's important to check that food and make sure that you can keep it past unleavened bread, by the way. Some granola bars have leavening in them. I don't know why. They still fall apart when you break into them. They're not puffy, but they have leavening in them, of all things. To have auxiliary light, to have some auxiliary heat, it's important to be prepared. Some survival guides even talk about an acronym. If you're not traveling, if you're out hiking, and you get lost, there's an acronym to remember. S-T-O-P, or stop. And what that stands for, the first letter is S, stop. S stands for stop, which is a bit redundant, I realize, but this is what the experts came up with. Stop, then there's think. The T is think. The O is observe, and the P is plan. Stop, think, observe, and plan. They say if you're lost, the first thing you need to do is to stop getting loster. Stop. And observe. Think. So you've stopped, think. What's next? Did anybody get instruction about where we were traveling? Where was the last town? How long will it take before someone notices that we're not there? Observe. Are there storm clouds on the horizon? Is everybody okay? Is anyone sick? Does anybody require first aid? If we're talking about an accident, that could very well be the case. And then P for plan, then what's our course of action? Is our immediate need to have shelter? Is our immediate need to find water? Is there a more critical need that we need to prepare for? How's the weather look? Are there storm clouds on the horizon? Do we need shelter right away? So stop, think, observe, and plan. Stand at the crossroads. Well, so far so good. Stand, which is stop. There was a story a couple years ago, Albert and Rita Chrétien, from British Columbia, and they were making their way to Las Vegas for a convention. And they were driving their full-size van to get to Las Vegas. And were relying on GPS to get there. Now, GPS can be a real mixed bag. You can find shortcuts that you didn't know existed. And sometimes you can find that those shortcuts that the GPS thinks exists really don't exist after all, or the road conditions are not are not passable. Or maybe the road has since changed and become a private drive. Well, in the sad case of Rita and Albert Chrétien, they went down primary roads, down secondary roads, tertiary roads, and into the mountains. They were finally being led down logging roads. And at one point they decided, you know, this doesn't look right. Are we in the right place? Should we proceed? And in the course of making their decision, they got stuck in the mud up to the axles. Vans are heavy, especially a full-size van. And so they were in a real predicament because they were so far off the grid, they were unable to make good communication and let someone know that they were in trouble. And they were so far back in the woods, back on tertiary roads, there was a low likelihood someone would come looking for them. So they decided the best course of action that Albert would have to go on foot and try to make it to the closest town. Now, thankfully, the GPS knew where the closest town was. It was about 13 miles in one direction. So off he went. So at least he could keep his wife safe, sheltered, because it was the turn of the season, late fall, early winter. And off he went. 6 weeks later, they found Rita. A couple of hunters were off in the area and discovered the van and came and found her, and she was in bad shape. She had been subsisting on melting snow, on the meager remains of trail mix that they did have. They had some preparation, which is good. And the authorities say if they had not found her when they did, she probably would not have survived. But she did survive. Unfortunately, her husband did not. He was not found for some 13 weeks later. And he had strayed off course. The battery on the GPS died. And he was then headed in the wrong direction, just past halfway to the next town. Unfortunately, it is a phenomenon that some experts are calling death by GPS. There was a report, you know, on CBS News, and they said a navigator can be a great aid, but you always want to plot it on a traditional map. I used to have all kinds of maps. I don't have any maps anymore. I always found it a challenge to get them folded up the right way again so that they wouldn't rip the next time you used them. It was almost an intelligence test for me, and I failed almost every time of getting them folded back up again. But they said it's important to plot it on a traditional map and make sure you understand the road ahead, which unfortunately these folks did not. GPS typically, or at least I think they're getting better now. But you can't rely on the GPS knowing the conditions of the road, especially if it's a secondary or tertiary road. Has it gotten too muddy to support the weight of your vehicle? The GPS just doesn't know these things. And in fact, they had a television news segment for this story and showed where a GPS would try to lead a person from point A to point B somewhere in California. The problem was that halfway between A and B on the road designated was a gated community, and the gate went right across the roadway. So, no. The GPS is not updated. The summary was, don't follow your GPS blindly. Stand at the crossroads and look. Crossroads, sometimes translated as ways in different passages. Crossroads or ways. Let's take a look at the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 2. Here's a challenge for you. I'm going to read this. Try not to hear the music. We'll read verses 2 through 3. Isaiah chapter 2. I'll start in verse 1. The word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways. There's that word. And we shall walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law. So ways, paths, metaphorically speaking, about what we do. Roadways. It is said almost exuberantly, victoriously, by elected officials, perhaps at the federal level, We are no longer a Christian nation. And from some quarters, you can almost hear a cheer. We're no longer a Christian nation, which is, of and by itself, kind of ironic, because some in that camp would claim that we never were a Christian nation, that there should be a separation of church and state that was always intended, and Christianity was never part of the founding of this country. Is that the case? Before the founding of the United States of America, the Speaker of the Assembly of what was then the province of Philadelphia commissioned a bell to be made to mark the 50th anniversary of the founding of the colony that William Penn first started, the 50th year, a year of jubilee. And so what this Speaker of the Provincial Assembly did was found a passage out of Leviticus. And you're probably familiar with this. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land, says the inscription on the bell, unto all the inhabitants thereof. Leviticus 25, verse 10, it says. And also on the bell, how's this for separation of church and state? By order of the Assembly of the Province of Pennsylvania for the State House in Philadelphia. It's separated by one line. We were a Christian nation. And it's true that we are certainly moving away from being a Christian nation as a whole. So what are we? We're at a crossroads. What do we believe in? Anything you want. Just don't tell me what to do. But what if I still want to be a Christian? That's fine. In the privacy of your own home. Take it out of the public square. And if you do it in your own home, close the curtains. We don't want anything to do with it anymore. We've really come a long way, haven't we? Or fallen a long way. How strange. How strange it is. And as I look and see from a moral standpoint, and I'm sure you have the same thoughts, you can't help but wonder, what would our forefathers think? What would they feel if they turned on the news? Well, first they'd ask, what's that box that is speaking to us? But beyond that, what would they say? If you fish around in your pocket and find a coin, if you still have coins, and pull it out, you'll see some text on it, In God We Trust. And there are people who want to get rid of that from our currency, as though our currency really was worth what we say it's worth. But let's get rid of it, because we don't want to be a nation under God anymore. It says, In God We Trust. I went to the Treasury Department's website and looked up what was the history of In God We Trust. And it says, according to them, the earliest such appeal to have God mentioned on a currency came in a letter dated November 13th, 1861. And it says here it was written to Secretary Chase, that's Salmon Chase, by Reverend M.R. Watkinson, who was a minister in Pennsylvania. And here's what he said. Dear sir, you're about to submit your annual report to the Congress respecting the affairs of the national finances. So this is around the outbreak of the Civil War, or during that time period. 1861. One fact touching a currency has hitherto been seriously overlooked. I can't believe people wrote like that then. But yeah, that's what they did. I mean the recognition of the Almighty God in some form on our coins. You are probably a Christian. Why would he assume that if we weren't a Christian nation to begin with, I wonder? What if our republic were not shattered beyond reconstruction? Would not the antiquaries of succeeding centuries rightly reason from our past that we were a heathen nation? So that's what they were saying in 1861. They would be shocked by what they would see today. What I propose is that instead of the goddess of liberty, Lady Liberty, we shall have next, inside 13 stars, a ring inscribed with the words perpetual union, with the ring and all-seeing eye crowned with the halo. He's a little off on his imagery, but the sentiment's correct. Beneath this eye, the American flag, bearing in its field stars equal to the number of states united, in the folds of the bars, the words, God, Liberty, Law. And so a couple years later, then Congress passed a bill that said, yes, we would have on our currency, In God We Trust. You would get the impression it hasn't been there that long. It was just in the 50s, we were one nation under God in the pledge. And it's not been that long since we had In God We Trust on our printed currency. And yet that is wanting to be removed because we're no longer a Christian nation after all. We are definitely, as a nation, as Western peoples, at a crossroads. At least we're stopped. What do we do next? Stop at the ways and look. Look. Stand in the ways and see. Ask of the old paths where the good way is and walk in it. Look. Let's take a look at Joshua chapter 2. Joshua chapter 2, and we'll read verse 1. Now Joshua the son of Nun, it says he was the first orphan, Joshua the son of Nun sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. "View the land," he said. So did they take along their disposable cameras and look for a tour, get a picture next to the wall? Get some t-shirts, maybe get a card for a frequent visitor to the local falafel hut and get to know the locals, the customs. That wasn't the point, was it? View the land. View as in study, as in spy it out. Look critically. Identify strengths. Identify weaknesses. Spy secretly. Anybody familiar with Louis L'Amour? Maybe I should say, how many are familiar with Louis L'Amour? Growing up, I had access to my dad's library of Louis L'Amour books. I suppose it was dad's and mom's. They both shared it. They both added to it. And I was given permission to check out certain books, read them, and thoroughly enjoyed them. He was quite a writer. I can't say that I enjoyed every aspect of the stories. The fight scenes, I think they were repetitions of the previous book's fight scene. Same formula. But he had incredible stories, very good imagery. And what I liked about his books were the concept that if he said a particular spring or well or creek was there or water hole, it in fact was there in the desert. So probably a good reason to carry Louis L'Amour books in your vehicle if you're traveling across the desert. But I like this from his autobiography. He was asked about his stories, and he said, "Stories, they are out there by the thousands, wonderful stories. Many have never gotten into histories, although occasionally told by local newspapers or privately printed booklets. Stories of wagon train massacres, of buried treasure, of gun battles, cattle roundups, border bandit raids. No matter where you go, east, west, north, and south, there are stories. Now, people are always asking me where I get the ideas, but one has only to listen, to look, and to live with awareness. As I've said in several of my stories, all men look, but so few can see." Do you remember that line from his books? People looking out across the landscape but not realizing or identifying or registering what was there. Either the potentials, the threats, they weren't really seeing. They were looking, but they were not seeing. So part of this passage from Jeremiah is to look. Look. Look critically. Where are we? So many are caught up in entertainment that they can't bother to look and see where we are now. To look back and see where we were as a nation. What were the little farms able to support? What are they able to support now? No one wants to look critically at cities. Are they healthy? Are they unhealthy? How unhealthy are they? Look. Ask for the ancient paths. The Lord says, stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths where the good way is and walk in it. Ask for the ancient paths. Let's take a look at Proverbs 22. Proverbs 22, verse 28. Verse 28 says, do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set. So not father, but fathers. This isn't a relatively old landmark. This is an ancient landmark. Similar word to what we have here, the ancient paths. These landmarks that helped identify borderies or boundaries, lines you don't cross, lines that set distinction, lines that provide structure, that provide ultimately strength. And is that derided now? Ancient paths. Now, some commentaries will talk about this pointing back the ancient paths back to Sinai covenant. I think that's in a narrow sense correct. But ancient, is it hard for us in our society to focus on ancient things? How many get the newspaper still delivered in paper? I suspect there'll be all kinds of ads in that paper tomorrow featuring a three-letter word, probably in red or yellow, N-E-W. New. Probably an exclamation mark after it. Because after all, what's old is not as good as what's new. It must be new. You need to get the new thing. New shoes. Shoe stores scare me. When I go in and see how fancy shoes have become, I wonder if my feet really would benefit from shoes that fancy. Last time I went looking for shoes, it took me forever to find the right pair. The last running shoe I got disgusted me. I wanted a shoe I could wear outside that wouldn't wear out, and it's got the mesh on the sides, the breathable kind, which is nice. I like my shoes to breathe. But the mesh, it gets snagged when you're cutting the grass, and then the grass clippings get in, and if you're trying to garden, that mesh just lets in all the dirt, then you've got sweaty, dirty feet. It's a mess. New shoes, they don't cut it for me anymore. They just don't last. They don't have the body that I would prefer in a shoe. Cars. Every year there's a new car. And why is it that the new year for cars never lines up with the calendar? Right? 2016 cars, when are they going to come out? Is it next week or the week after? They're always coming out early because you have new needs now, and now you need the new car, the new van. Because someone who drives a minivan, their needs change completely from one calendar year to the next. And so you have to have the new one. Now, obviously, there's some nice improvements that are made. Are the improvements that significant that you need a new one? I wonder. What really irks me are when you get a new program for your computer, and it's brand new, and the menus have all changed, and the colors are different, and you can't find where the special command was that was so easy to get to before. All the commands are still there. There's no new ones. They just put them in a new place so that it can be called new, and they can charge you for it then. New gadgets, new phones. I have some office mates who are really into technology, and they have the capacity to stay current on new phones. When I get a phone, I want to keep it for a long time because it takes me forever to learn how to use the stupid thing. I thought it was a smartphone, but it's not. No, you got to get the new one. New. Ask for the ancient paths, the boundaries, the borders. and ask where the good way is. Ask where the good way is. Let's take a look at Job 22. Job chapter 22. I wonder sometimes if Job had more patience for the trials that he was going through, the loss of his family, the loss of his livelihood, or if he had greater patience in dealing with his friends. Whatever the case, I know he has more patience than I do. Chapter 22, it starts off with Eliphaz the Temanite answering. Let's take a look at verse 15. In verse 15, Eliphaz asks Job the question, "Will you keep the old way which wicked men have trod?" So there is the old way, and then there's an old way. So just because it's old doesn't mean it's good. Do you like watching the Antiques Roadshow? Have you heard of the Antiques Roadshow? Have you heard of antiques? Okay. Occasionally a person will bring in an antique and they'll be so excited about this because they know what it is. And the reviewer will look at it and say, yes, this is definitely an old fake. And they're heartbroken because they've had this in the... It can't be fake because my great-great-grandfather got it in a poker game and they said it was a real thing. Yeah, we believe your great-great-grandfather got it that way. That's not what we're disputing. It's an old fake. Somebody counterfeited it a long time ago, and it's been thought of as the real deal since then. We were at a coin meeting, one of my sons and I, and they deal with coins, but also with printed currency as well. And one of the club members in this particular club happens to be quite renowned in printing and engraving circles. He knows his currency inside and out. He has contacts in all kinds of countries and knows actually personally, in some cases, the engraver for who did a particular bill in the United Kingdom for this particular denomination. Someone brought in an old, I think it was past 1776, but it was an old bill. And it was being passed around, people were holding it carefully in its little plastic sheath, and then Gene got a look at it and said, "Oh yeah, that's a fake." I said, "How do you know it's a fake? Look, it's got nice filigree. The paper's falling apart. It looks old and aged. How can you tell?" He said, "Yeah, it's an old fake." He had a trained eye. He knew what to look for. He knew what the original article looked like and knew that the item inside the plastic was old and worth about what it looked, tattered, wrinkled. It was not a valid old way. And which is not to say in our country the old ways or the old institutions that we had were good either. There were some institutions that needed to be repudiated, that needed to be jettisoned long ago. So just because it's old doesn't mean it's good. So from this passage in Job, does it remind us of the battle hymn of the Republic where the saints have trod? That is what he is being asked here. Will you keep the old way which wicked men have trod, or the alternative? The good way. If you want to jot this down in your notes, Acts 9, verse 2. Acts 19, verse 9. Acts 19, 23. Acts 24, 14, and 24, 22, where it talks about the way that the believers in the New Testament church we're following. This is the good way. Ask where the good way is. Ask where the good way is. And we sang a little bit about this in Psalm 119, didn't we? Psalm 119, starting in verse 97. Psalm 119, 97, starting in the Mem section. "Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. You, through your commandments, make me wiser than my enemies." And some of them were pretty crafty. Some of them were pretty smart. "For they," that is your commandments, "are ever with me. I have more understanding than all my teachers. These weren't dummies, they were teachers. They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were talking about, but he was wiser than even them. For your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the ancients because I keep your precepts. I've restrained my feet from every evil way. It's a wrong way, even if it's old. That I may keep your word. I have not departed from your judgments, for you yourself have taught me how sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Though your precepts, or through your precepts, rather, I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. And ask where the good way is. Stand in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths where the good way is, and walk in it. Walk. 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17, we'll read verses 12 through 14. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons, and the man was old, just in case you don't know what that means, advanced in years, in the day of Saul. The 3 eldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to battle. The name of his sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him, Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. Same word, follow or walk in it. And it's not enough to find the old way. It's good to have stopped. It's good to have examined these crossroads. It's good to have inquired of the old ways to determine that there are old ways that are good, old ways that are not good. We've identified the good way. Now what? Walk in it. Identify it. Identify with it and make it your own. That was what God was telling the Israelites so many times. Walk in it. And in it. Walk in it. Let's take a look at Leviticus. Leviticus 26:3. Leviticus 26, 26 verse 3, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them, then I will give you rain in its season. The land shall yield its produce. The trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Did I mention last time my peach trees? We got a peach tree when we moved into our home. To give the backyard some extra life, some goodies. We also put in some black raspberry bushes, some blueberry bushes, some gooseberry bushes, strawberries. We've put in plum. We have tried to make the yard edible, at least more edible than it was, and have really enjoyed the fruit. We've canned the fruit and made toppings for waffles and pancakes. It's been a lot of fun. Of course, the raccoons learned about the peach tree, too, so we had to make a stop at Tractor Supply and get one of those special fences with a generator that plugs in that sends an invitation every second or so. They kept on getting them, and I'd scare them out of the tree, and then the next day I would find a half-eaten peach on the steps, almost as if to say, you think you can scare us away? Here's what I think of your not scary voice at night. It was so exciting the first night I put up that fence because I knew there was a raccoon in the yard and I just couldn't wait. I was watching from the window and I knew it was out there. I could hear it wandering around, and before long I heard a zap and ooh! No more raccoon problem with the peaches. But there was a problem in another way. We wanted to add to the orchard in the backyard, so we got an apple tree. I think it was a Golden Delicious. It was on clearance at Lowe's. I couldn't help myself. We brought it home. I treated it the right way, had some recycled horse feed around it. And that year, it blossomed. We were thrilled to see the blossoms. Little itty-bitty apples were there. And they got bigger, and before long, those bitty apples started to get little black spots on them. And those black spots started to spread and devoured the apple. And so that year, we had a perfectly good tree that started out with fruit that didn't bear its fruit. And to add insult to injury, that same rust or fungus, whatever it was, spread to the peach trees. So we lost almost all those peaches that year. They got some sort of a mummification fungus that made them shrivel. We tried to save as many as we could, picking them green, putting them in a brown paper bag, putting a banana in the bag so that the off gas of the banana helped it ripen. They tasted like peaches, but they certainly weren't sweet like a tree ripened peach was. The land shall yield its produce, and the trees of the field shall yield its fruit. The condition is, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them. Okay, you found the way, you're walking in it, and I think God is interested to know, why are we doing it? I can see what you're doing, but why are you doing it? Because you have to, or because you love it? Walk in it. Stand in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths where the good way is, and walk in it. And you will find rest for your souls. Find. Luke 15, verses 8 through 10. Luke 15, we'll read a parable. So in this chapter, we have all kinds of lost parables. In verse 8, or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, doesn't light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it, which is somewhat reminiscent of getting ready for the days of unleavened bread. Verse 9, and when she has found it, she calls her friends and neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the peace that I lost. Likewise, I say to you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God, one over one sinner who repents. Can we find anything that hasn't been lost? I suppose we can happen upon something that we didn't realize we lost. But unless it's been lost, you can't really find it. What's been lost now in our nation? What have we lost? Do you know the story of the pocket watch in the ice house? Men were working in the ice house, and the ice house, of course, for those of us who don't watch Little House on the Prairie or haven't watched it. The ice house was a building where blocks of ice would have been stored, and the ice would have been harvested this time of year from rivers or lakes or ponds, cut, and one by one loaded onto a wagon, and that wagon would have been taken to the ice house, which would have been a low-cut building, probably with earth pushed against the sides to add insulation to it. Sawdust would be gathered from the sawmill, and those blocks would be packed in as tightly as possible. The sawdust would be jammed into the corners, maybe canvas put over top of each layer, and the process would be repeated. So that in June, July, August, ice cream could be made from that ice. Ice boxes could be filled so that cream wouldn't spoil. So this was an important activity. And in the summer, in this particular town, the men were working to take the ice out of the ice house that had been gathered the winter before. And it wasn't long before the boys who were lazily watching the scene noticed something had changed in the workmen. They weren't busy working like they were, but they seemed to be focused on what was inside strictly, not on what was inside to be put on delivery wagons. And so they came closer and discovered that one of the workmen had lost a pocket watch. These days, we have so many timepieces, we've lost the significance of what a pocket watch was. But the pocket watch was what kept the trains going. It was something that was handed down from generation to generation, usually with fancy engraving and filigree on it, maybe an inscription on the inside case. It was a big deal to this individual. And they looked and they searched, all of the grown men looking, trying to find this watch because they knew how important it was to the owner, that it had been passed down from generation to generation. And finally, they just decided, we can't keep looking for it. We'll give up. It's lunchtime. Let's just take a break, and we'll get back to our job, to our work. And so one of the little boys couldn't help himself, saw the distress of the individual having lost his watch, decided to go in and look for himself, closed the door, and a couple minutes later came out holding the watch. Said, here you go. The men were dumbfounded. How did you find this watch? We were in there on our hands and knees, raking through that sawdust. How did you find it? The little boy said, it was easy. I found a spot over there where the ice had already been moved. I closed the door. I laid down. I put my hands over my chest. And I was still and quiet. And when I listened, I heard a faint tick, 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 tick. And so he knew where to look for the watch. And that's how he found it. You can't find something that hasn't been lost. What's been lost? Thus says the Lord, stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. Rest for your souls. Let's take a look at Matthew chapter 11. And we'll read verses 28 through 30. Verse 28, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Are you enjoying your rest on the Sabbath day? Do we appreciate it? Do I take my rest for granted? Is it easy to take rest for granted? It can be. How long would our to-do list be if we weren't here today? It would be just as long as anyone else's. Rest for your souls. Our locks and locksmiths going out of business because security is no longer needed. How many have single, triple, double locks, quadruple locks, bars on windows so that when they go to bed at night, they can have rest for their souls, to have that added security? Car alarms are required in so many places. Do they still have the club that goes on the steering wheel? I see that at Tractor Supply every once in a while. I used to have one that went around my steering wheel and then around the accelerator, so, okay, you can get into my vehicle, but you can't drive it. If you saw me in it, you'd know I couldn't drive it either. And you'll find rest for your souls. Does this world need rest? Have we ever lost that? And how much more? Stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths where the good way is and walk in it. And then you will find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it. We will not walk in it. Let's go back again to Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26. Starting in verse 14, but if you do not obey me and do not observe all these commandments And if you despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgments so that you do not perform all my commandments but break my covenant, I will also do this to you. I will even appoint terror over you. I'm sure that's a coincidence that word is used. Terror over you, wasting disease, fever which shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow for the heart. You'll sow your seed in vain and your enemies shall eat it. I'll set my face against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues you. And on until verse 40, these keep being elevated. And Judah learned the hard way that God means business. They suffered the same fate that Israel did, because they said, "We will not walk in it." What about our Western nations today? When I went to school, we still said the Lord's Prayer, or at least recited it, before class started. Where is that allowed anymore? I remember the Gideon Society handed out a copy of Psalms and Proverbs for each of the students, their own personal copy to read, where they could learn self-control, where they could learn respect for their elders, where they could learn honesty. Well, we can't have that in school, can we? That's not allowed anymore. Christian businesses are challenged from all sides and are sued. As I mentioned, there's a movement to remove "In God We Trust," to change one nation under God. Have you seen Red Skelton's version of the pledge? When he talked about, wouldn't it be a shame if one day they said this was a prayer and you could no longer say it. He was a comedian and a prophet, wasn't he? We will not walk in it. Stand in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths where the good way is, and walk in it. Then you will find rest for your souls. But they said, "We will not walk in it." Thankfully, that's not the end of the story for Israel, for Judah, for Western nations today, is it? Although as they continue this drive or this push to move further away from the way, the good way, we know that God's patience is challenged. And I'm sure those who've come before us, the letter I read from the 1860s, they would marvel at where we are and wonder how God could be so patient. And eventually the patience will run out. Patience for nations like the United States, for the United Kingdom, for Canada, Australia, and others. And they will feel God's wrath the same way that Israel and Judah did. Thankfully, even after that, it is not the end of the story. Micah chapter 4. Micah chapter 4, we'll read the first four verses. Verse 1, "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow to it. Many nations shall come and say, 'Come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways. We will walk in his paths.' For out of Zion the law shall go forth, and the word of the Lord, from Jerusalem. He shall judge between many peoples, rebuke strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, and neither shall they learn war anymore." Verse 4, "But everyone shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. For the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken." I look forward to a time when people are able to sit in peace and security, to have rest for their souls while they sit underneath their vine, their fig tree, on their own acreage. Acreages that spring up where the land would no longer sustain them, like it does these days, but like the way it used to. When the reaper, the planter, will have conflicting time schedules. What a time that will be. And communities, again, like romance and those that we saw, some that you're familiar with too, will again flourish, and the roads that connect them will also flourish. And most importantly, those roads will lead to the mountain of the Lord.